This is Stuart Molina, podcasting from my home in Harrisburg, talking about opening night of the 2007-2008 season. I've already taken you through the Tannhäuser Overture, and that brings us to our concerto, Dvorak's beautiful violin concerto. It'll be played by Karen Gomeo, who was here a few years ago playing Sibelius's gorgeous violin concerto, and she played it so gorgeously that we immediately re-engaged her for this upcoming season. I think the Dvorak is a very, very beautiful piece, very lyrical, a little bit strange in the way it's put together, as I'll talk about in a moment, but I think it's a wonderful fit for this opening night program. The Dvorak Violin Concerto was written in 1879 for the violinist Joachim. He was very famous. Brahms wrote most of his violin music for him, and Dvorak knew him well as well. And Joachim did not like this piece because it was so unconventional in the way it was put together. What does that mean? Well, let's look at the first movement for a moment. In general, sonata form would, for a concerto, would have the orchestra state a first and second theme, then the soloist would come in and play standard sonata form, the first and second theme, a development section developing those two themes, and then a restatement, a recapitulation of the two themes in the tonic key. This piece feels much more like an open fantasy. It does have two main theme groups, but the bulk of the piece, certainly at least one half of the first movement, is kind of free form. It begins with a bold statement by the orchestra. And then the violin enters dramatically at the very beginning. Now, this is similar in the way that Dvorak approaches his cello concerto. The solo instrument comes in very early on in the piece, and the violin plays the makings of the first theme. Etc. We have another statement of the same opening, and then we have what seems to be our standard orchestral tutti, where everyone in the orchestra plays the main theme groups together. Actually seems much more like a transition section. It's not really our main theme that we had earlier. He does give us kind of a contrasting lyrical theme. And so forth. But we really don't have a real statement of our theme yet, other than this little taste of it at the very beginning. The violin does enter soon thereafter, though, and has, again, kind of the theme. But still, it's not a real statement of the theme. The violin proceeds to play another lyrical theme. But still no real statement. Finally, after another burst of activity, we do get a real statement of our first theme. But we're already, virtually halfway into the movement. So what is this all about? Is Dvorak just discarding sonata form altogether? Are we going to get a real second theme? Well, as it turns out, we do get a second theme. Again, so far into the piece that it almost feels like just a contrasting section of just a free fantasy. And this theme is actually quite beautiful. This is typical Dvorak second theme. He'll give you a dramatic first theme, and then almost like a song for a second theme. And the texture which accompanies it is almost a dance texture, with the cellos playing a very light rhythmic accompaniment, which gives this section of a piece a little bit of lilt. He gives us a variation on this theme, which is quite lovely. And then a closing section, something that brings back our opening theme in a way that we know is headed towards a closing. Sounds like this. And this leads us towards a big cadence, a big harmonic resolution. But strangely, it doesn't go into a standard development section. Rather, he kind of remains freeform until we do have a big return. Now, as I said, we're already well into the piece, probably 8, 9, 10 minutes into the piece. And so as an audience member, you might be thinking, well, we're only arriving at the recapitulation at this point with a big orchestral tutti. Is he going to take us through everything we've heard before? Well, not really. We have, rather than that, a statement of the opening theme again, as though it's the big return. And then he ends the movement. He just brings it to a close. We reach a big dramatic moment. The violin plays a short cadenza, and we have a little moderato section. He calls it quasi moderato, which means somewhat like moderato. And it has elements of the first movement, but clearly we've left the world of the first movement and we're heading into the lyrical world of the second movement. So what does this mean? Well, I think Dvorak is experimenting. Dvorak, of course, is well familiar with the great violin concertos that came before this. And he's clearly trying to stake out his own ground and try something a little bit different. He hasn't completely discarded the world of two themes, but he's certainly shifted it around quite a lot in a way that he really never does in any of his symphonies or even in the great cello concerto. What it does for the audience is it leaves us on the edge of our seat. We don't know what's going to come. We don't have that comfortable feeling of establishment, development, and revisiting that you get in sonata form. At any rate, we have a little transitional section in which the woodwinds and the solo brings us to the second movement. The second movement is an adagio, but he writes adagio ma non troppo, not too adagio. It should flow. It's a song. It's a lyrical movement. And I sometimes feel like performances make a big mistake in taking these adagios way too slow. So we'll have to see how it plays out next week, because of course our soloist will make the call as to what the tempo is. But my anticipation is that it will flow very beautifully, slowly, but lyrically. This movement is in 3/8 time, meaning we have 3/8 notes per measure. And any time you see in Dvorak a triple meter, 3/8, 3/16, 3/4 time, always be on the lookout for what I call hemiola. Hemiola is a rhythmic regrouping from two groups of three to three groups of two. So you would have 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2. For example, the song America. And if you're counting that, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2. Now, composers in the late part of the 19th century were enamored of the hemiola. My teacher used to say that Brahms and Dvorak were born in the hemiola hospital. Because truly, whenever there's an opportunity for hemiola, they use it. So that's why I say when you see a movement of Dvorak in triple time, you can rest pretty well assured that there is going to be some kind of hemiola. But this movement begins just as a lyrical triple time melody. Very simple, very beautiful. Obviously, it's going to go in new directions as we proceed, but Dvorak has set out just a simple, lovely adagio melody. So where's our hemiola? Well, this first phrase will end with a hemiola, and this is actually a fairly clear one. I'll play you a couple of measures before so you can hear what I'm talking about. That's a hemiola in a slow tempo. So what does that mean? It means nothing really. It's still just incredibly beautiful. But it's a tool that these composers use to shake things up. It doesn't really change the meter. We're not adding weird 1/8 measures or 4/8 measures in the music, but rather we're just reorganizing the beats that are there. The next little melody you'll hear is extremely beautiful and typically Dvorak. Just a tinge of sadness, a tinge of pain. But just extremely lovely. At the end of this opening section, we have a much more dramatic section. And this is what it will sound like at first. It's a sudden change, extremely dramatic. You'll have a tremolo feeling in the strings. The violin is playing in octaves, which gives a very dramatic effect as well. Again, a typical change for Dvorak. If you look at any of his late symphonies, in his lyric movements, you have these very dramatic moments that almost pop out of nowhere. The next main theme that I'd like to point out is almost like a closing theme. It's extremely sweet, extremely almost ethereal, and you'll hear it in the strings being accompanied by the violin solo, but the string part will sound like this. And so on. This comes directly out of the dramatic theme. that third is the same as... as we have in this ethereal third theme. This is one of the prettiest slow movements, I think, in the concerto repertoire. And the way that Dvorak composes it, again, has almost a feeling of a free-flowing fantasy. Not quite to the degree that the first movement had, because of that weird long introduction in the first movement. But rather, it feels like just a free-flowing from one beautiful theme to another, to another. There is one more thing that I would like to mention about this movement, and that's at the end of the movement, when he returns to some of these themes for a second time, he does so with a little bit of a twist. For example, towards the end, there's a return to the second dramatic theme, and he adds a trumpet fanfare of sorts, a rhythmic figure in the trumpets. This isn't so unique or strange, but what is interesting is that he continues it as what's called an obbligato rhythmic figure, meaning that it continues underneath what follows. And what follows is the opening theme, but this time it's given this different texture with the trumpets, albeit softly, playing that martial rhythmic theme. And then he continues with an actual statement of the original theme rather than just the snippet we just heard, and he shifts that obbligato rhythmic figure to the basses and the celli so that it gives it this kind of pulsating rhythm underneath. Just an interesting demonstration of Dvorak's use of variation and his brilliance in coming up with new ways of presenting the same material. And the last example of that is the return of the serene, ethereal fourth theme that I mentioned. This time, when it returns, right towards the end of the movement, it's now with the entire orchestra playing it majestically and strongly. Etc. Again, it's just a wonderful demonstration of how Dvorak uses variation. The last movement is kind of a version of a dance form called the Furiant. A Furiant, I guess the best example that I know of is the eighth Slavonic dance in the first set of Slavonic dances that Dvorak wrote. Again, we're faced very obviously with the hemiola. 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 1. Dividing those two measures of three into three measures of two. This movement at the end is the same. Although instead of every other pair of measures, he actually starts with a pure hemiola theme. 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, meter of this final movement, which is actually three. It's a 3 meter, but he starts out by giving us this kind of fake out of several measures in a 2 meter. And this will continue throughout the piece. And he's actually going to vary how he divides up these measures. Sometimes he'll use the hemiola, and sometimes he won't. I'll give you just a couple of examples. The second alternating theme. It's actually not a second theme. It's the second part of the first theme. Goes like this. Right there, we're faced the first time with a hemiola, and then immediately followed without a hemiola. And you'll hear infinite, well, not infinite, but certainly many different kinds of variations like that, using the same melody, but varying the rhythmic underpinnings of the melody. So, this is a rondo movement, and a rondo movement means we have our main theme that's going to be separated by little episodic themes in between. So we'll hear our opening theme several times, sometimes loud, sometimes soft, sometimes by the soloist with a thin accompaniment, sometimes with the whole orchestra playing together, and sometimes with the hemiola and sometimes without. There is one little short part of this opening theme group which really reminds me of the Slavonic dances, and it's first heard in the woodwinds. It's just kind of a delightful little closing part of this opening theme, and it will lead us on to the things that follow. But again, we have the hemiola underneath. Almost sounds like two much longer 3/4 measures. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. When actually the meter of the music is 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, and etc. At any rate, we move on. We have a little bit of a transition section, and then we have our second theme. Very simple, delightful, typically Dvorak, folky kind of second theme. And this is going to go on a little bit. Again, we're going to hear a lot of hemiolas. There's one part where you'll hear an alternation between the orchestra and the soloist, where the orchestra is playing a 3 meter and the violin follows with the hemiola. Let me play it for you because it's, again, typical of this kind of dance form. Pretty cool music, I think, and I think that the hemiola lends it an energy because you actually don't know when he's going to jump into that 2 meter and when he's going to stay in the 3 meter. This will lead to yet another theme, this one also very dance-like, very lyrical. Harmonically, it's typical of Dvorak. We have, this would normally, this B7 chord would normally resolve in harmony to an E chord, but instead he kind of fakes us out and leads us into C sharp minor. That's a very Slavic kind of approach, and then made even more so by the second time we hear it. Now takes us to C sharp major. I point this out just again because it's pretty typical of Dvorak's harmonic language. After hearing all of these alternate themes, we return to our opening theme, and he sets it up with a new texture we haven't heard before, with the cellos playing an open fifth in alternation, and the timpani playing a hemiola. And on top of this, we hear our melody. Again, just another variation, using hemiola, using changes in rhythm, to give the audience a feeling of not just a return to something they know, but little differences to keep it interesting. But he hasn't thrown us his last curve, because the next episode isn't in a 3-beat at all. He actually takes it and changes it into a 2-4 kind of dance. Now, this isn't unheard of. Mozart did similar things in his violin concertos, where suddenly he would shift gears in the last movement and give us an episode that was in a different meter. But here it's a very nice transition, because we have our 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, and he ends the section with a French horn playing that rhythm. And the French horn continues as we hear this new theme. So we don't lose a sense of where we've been rhythmically. We just have this new duple meter feeling placed on top of it. And again, it's very much a Slavic kind of melody in a minor key, a very simple melody, but with a real feeling of folk lyricism. And we'll have some variations on this. This section goes on for a little while before things build up again and we return to our opening theme. This time with the opening theme, he again gives us a different texture underneath. He gives us scales in some of the strings, the violins and the violas. Etc. And he gives us an offbeat in the timpani, horn, and bass. And this offbeat will always come on the third. So against the melody, it kind of betrays the hemiola. And so on. So again, a new texture, a little bit of a difference before it explodes into a big tutti one more time. And we hear all of our previous themes one more time. So one could actually say that it's more of a rondo sonata form in that it returns to a first, second, and third theme twice in the course of it. It just feels much more like a rondo for some reason because of the pervasiveness of that opening theme. Just in closing, it's really quite amazing what he does at the end because he brings us back to that duple theme, but just for a moment. We've heard it before, so it's not new material, but now he's using it not as a theme in and of itself, but rather as a closing theme to drive us toward the end. Just a charming reminder of our little folk dance that we heard in the middle of this movement, and it brings this wonderful, lyrical, rhythmically exciting, and dazzlingly virtuosic concerto to an end.